Hey, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car. If this is Monday, welcome. If it's Tuesday or Wednesday, whenever, we're glad you're with us. I'm Josh, and we are back with Luke and Adam, excited for another episode. Forgot which one this is. I don't know, 15, 16, 17,
361.
Nah, I think we're on back. Like 22 now, man.
Are we? Cool. Yep. Okay, so we're here, and we're feeling good, apparently. So why are we feeling good this week, Luke? Check in. Adam, check in.
Yeah, feeling pretty good. We're recording on a Thursday, so we finally got back into the rhythm of having youth group. And whenever we take like a month and a half off, it kind of feels like it's lasted more than that. So getting back into that rhythm last night, both for me and I think for our teens, was good. Started with a good night, so waking up this morning feeling good about that. A little bit of a headache.
Yeah.
But that is also par for the course for days after youth group.
Gotta hydrate, man.
And yeah,
I know.
And the weather, we got some rain coming in and all that too. So
yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, absolutely. It's like, what is it supposed to be? It's supposed to be 68 degrees on January.
Yeah, I put on shorts today.
The 12th.
Yeah. Like, it's nice.
Yeah. I'm still wearing shorts. A hoodie.
But it's gonna
there's only
gonna
like
dump
a couple
some
months.
Rain though later. So
yeah, yeah. I'm feeling good. Chiefs have a bye in the first round. We're not playing football this weekend.
News.
So that
is so great.
It's so great to not have to worry and stress about a playoff game right now.
Just the next week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever
so I can
we play the Chargers, Bills, or Bengals.
Yeah. Or Dolphins. No. So our only chance to play is either the Jaguars, Chargers, Ravens, or Dolphins. So it's all the lower seeds.
Correct.
So yeah. That's good.
I think it'll be the Chargers.
I don't. I think it'll be the Jaguars.
Okay, bold,
that was
bold
promised,
prediction.
The prince that was promised.
The prince
will
that was promised.
Take out Justin Herbert.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's mostly a Doug Peterson versus Brandon Staley thing.
That I'll take that bet.
So
for sure.
All right. So we got excitement about NFL playoffs. We also have excitement from many of our folks about the national championship just stomping that Georgia
did. I didn't know that Walnut Grove JV's team was playing against Georgia.
Yeah.
The national championship.
That's right.
Yep.
You know, did you realize Georgia scored more touchdowns than TCU scored points?
Yeah.
That's nine nice. Touchdowns to seven total
so
points.
If they were just taking a touchdown for one, mm-hmm. they still would have won.
They yeah. still would have won if they only scored 1 point on every touchdown. Yeah. How about that? you know, last week we talked about Horned Frogs, and I didn't know anything about Horned Frogs, so I went to Jenny on our staff, who is also from Texas, and asked her about Horned Frogs. She also didn't know, so we looked up a YouTube video and found out that on their last defense, the real-life Horned Frogs squirt blood out of their eyeballs,
gross.
Out of their eye sockets, not their eyeballs, their eye sockets at their predators, and this is just nasty. So maybe TCU should have tried that.
They needed maybe to try something.
Try something different, yeah.
It may have happened.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, so we're recording this, what is today, the 12th, right?
Yeah.
So tomorrow, ooh, that's Friday the 13th.
Spooky.
Spooky.
Wedding venues, 50% off.
50. So does anyone know why 13 is considered so unlucky?
I have no clue.
No, I've got no idea. I do know that a lot of like buildings will omit the 13th floor mm-hmm. if it goes above because of that yep. kind of superstition. But I don't know why the number 13.
So I only did a little bit of reading, but part of it is because 12, Adam, you were mentioning a few weeks ago how 12 is just this round number. It's completeness.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it is just the juxtaposition of the number 13 against the number 12, which is complete. So 13 is kind of like not complete. It's not right. It's unlucky. They're also, this is funny, in Norse mythology, the god Loki was the 13th to arrive at a feast where he tricked another attendee into killing the god Baldur. And in Christianity, Judas, the apostle who betrayed Jesus, was the 13th guest at the Last Supper.
Interesting.
Apparently. That's what this website is
saying. So, because you'd have to add Jesus in.
Correct. As the first guest.
Correct.
Or, yeah.
So, anyway, we don't know why 13.
Loki.
We really don't
know.
Is
this where Marvel Cinematic Universe gets Thor's
yes.
half-brother? Is that that character?
Yeah, that's all Norse.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
There you go.
So anyway, we really don't know much about the unluckiness of 13, but maybe some of you can tell us, which is what we love is when you guys give us feedback. In fact, I'm going to read something I got on a text this morning. A few weeks ago, we talked about Adam said he changes his toothbrush once a year. New Year's resolution?
Yes.
And so I got a text this morning that said, you're supposed to change your toothbrushes every 6 months when you go to the dentist.
There you go.
You get the free one from there. That was a joke too, I think.
You know, there's a part of me that gets really, really mad. I haven't been to the dentist in a while, so there's a little bit of a confession. But as an adult, going to the dentist is a totally different experience because they still are in your mouth for a good hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get out of that chair, there's no offer for a piece of candy or for a sticker or something like that. The last time I was in, they were ready to see me out. And I said, no.
You need to change your dentist, man.
You will give me a sticker because I deserve it. And that's exactly what happened. And I got my sticker as an adult, walked out the door a little bit more happy. But look, if anyone's in my mouth for an hour, I deserve something. I hate the dentist.
So the rest of that text says, love the podcast and my Mondays with y'all. I've learned so much about you. Keep it up. It brightens my day. So we love that. Thank you for the encouragement. And we really do hope it is encouraging and helpful. Adam, you began a sermon on Sunday just telling that you and Jennifer are listening to true crime podcasts. So this is your chance. Convince us why we should or any other podcast that we should be listening to.
And so using confession with true crime is not a great thing to do. So I'm not confessing to committing true crime. I think it was over this past summer. We would just throw on some true crime podcasts. We did a lot of traveling, you know, taking Jaden out to school and stuff.
How long is one of those?
It depends on which one it is.
I've listened to one that's like half hour, that's like 2 hours long as well.
Yeah. Because you can find them like over specific cases or there's one, I think it's just called Crime Junkies or something like, I think that's what it's called. And it's just a different story every single week. And that one messes with you because you're like, oh my goodness, I hope they catch this guy. But then you forget, it's like, oh, no, the reason they're doing this podcast is because
they solved the mystery.
Because there is no mystery that's been solved yet. It's still out there. And so they're throwing it out there like, hey, help us find, you know, what happened here.
Wow.
So it's almost all cold cases. So you
feel like you're a part of it now. If you have a revelation about what could have happened, you get to email into the podcast and say, I've got it.
No.
No. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's just interesting and it's just kind of good background noise. And
what other you know podcasts maybe they'd be helpful for our people. Like this last week in our small group, we sat around and told about a kind of a Bible podcast through the Word, I think is what it was. Any other podcasts that are fun or helpful that
There's one called Times Hours. It's all about the Kansas City Chiefs, and so it's got some inside knowledge. One that has been interesting for me to listen to recently is just, I think it's called, I'll have to get my phone out for sure, but it's like American History Tellers.
Okay.
And so if you're just like into history and, you know, just stories like, American History Tellers and then American Scandal, it's the same group. But it's like, I remember I listened to one on the Cuban Missile Crisis. And didn't know a whole lot about it and Bay of Pigs, all those things. Mm-hmm. There's one all about, you know, the history of American assassinations. It's just interesting stuff. That's kind of where
there's lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, there really is. So
Luke, you got a favorite something?
I listen to pretty much exclusively youth ministry podcasts. So Youth Ministry Hacks, Youth Ministry on Tap, 5 Minutes with Marco, Youth Ministry Sherpas, any youth ministry podcast there is, I'll listen to. Now, a couple of them that I started listening to recently are kind of more in the youth ministry world, but they're more fun than they are helpful. Yeah. I don't remember the name of this one, but I found a podcast recently where a couple of guys host, and they just... you know, they get youth ministers from around the world to email them with their like craziest youth ministry story or their biggest youth ministry fail.
Yeah.
And they'll just like tell the story on the podcast and listen to it. And it makes me feel good.
good.
Whenever I listen to those, I'm like, that hasn't happened to me yet. Keyword yet, you know?
Yeah.
So that one's fun. There's also this is like you would have to kind of understand the comedy for this. So there's a t-shirt company called Sunday Cool, mm-hmm. and they do custom t-shirts for groups, mostly churches, all that sort of stuff. And no, I'm not paid to advertise for them, but the way that they advertise for their company is through just videos that are hilarious. And there's two guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of them is nicknamed Cool Carl, but his real name's Josh. One of them is named Andy, who I actually knew for a little bit in Joplin. And Josh and Andy started a podcast for their company.
Okay.
Called Ninjas Are Butterflies. And it's just, they just get together and talk about ridiculous stuff.
Cool.
And it's funny. I have a good time with that one. But yeah, unless you want to listen... If you want to listen to anything other than youth ministry podcasts, I don't have anything for you. If you want to listen to youth ministry podcasts, I've got a lot.
There you go.
So that's what I do.
Hey, a fun one for me is it's the Nate Land podcast. Nate Bargatze, comedian, has one.
And I just rewatched his specials this week.
He's got another special coming out on the 31st of January, a new one. So that'll be fun. He's just a funny guy, clean comedian. So that's always nice to find someone who's a clean comedian, you know, really, really good. And Adam, you're the one who shared him with me. So thank you for that recommendation.
Yep.
It's always good. Another one that's been fun is called Business Wars. And so they take different companies.
I've listened to that one some.
Like Pepsi versus Coke or, you know, Detroit versus Tesla and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And just through the years, Starbucks versus Dunkin', you know, all kinds of different businesses. So. Anyway, enough about that. We had a service on Sunday. So yesterday, perhaps as you listen to this, a few days from now as we record, Adam, this was part two of To My Friend Who Left the Faith. And so we're just going to do what we often do, just ask you to kind of recap us. What was week two all about?
Yeah, if week one was directed more inward towards us and looking at us as Christians, as followers, and how our mindset, our attitude is towards those who may be doubting. This one is definitely more towards trying to answer some doubts. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole point, what I was trying to get across is like, really, there's one thing that matters more than any other thing that is out there. And that Christianity rises and falls with the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that is the ultimate question that we have to answer. Did he really rise from the dead? Mm-hmm. And really, I think probably another way to phrase the question is, really, I would put it like this, is, so why was the tomb empty?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was an empty tomb. And so what is the cause of that, and how you answer that question changes everything.
Yeah, Luke, as you think about that and the sermon and what was challenging, insightful, thoughtful, how about for you?
Yeah, I thought the overall talk about resurrection was just a great reminder, but what really stood out to me is just how personal the resurrection can actually be for each individual. So sometimes you know, on Easter Sunday, you correctly get overwhelmed by the power of our God to raise Jesus from the dead, the truth of that story. But then sometimes we just kind of leave it at that and not really make the connection.
Kind of the fact that it happened,
right,
not personally how it affects
me. We don't make the transition to what that actually means for me. Mm-hmm. And so I loved, Adam, just kind of the way that you laid out what was said in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, but then kind of ended the sermon with those application points of no, because the resurrection is true. That means you individually, your past can be forgiven. Mm-hmm. You can experience power today and your future can be secure. And those are things that you would not be certain of personally if the resurrection did not happen.
Yeah.
And so because it did, you can be sure of those things. And I just thought that was really encouraging as a good reminder. And just kind of was comforted to bridge the gap between just the talk of the resurrection, the fact of the resurrection, into the actual implications that it has for me and for the people that I come into contact with every day.
Yeah, very similar to me. Adam, there was a line in there that said, you mentioned chapter 15 of 1 Corinthians works sort of as a hinge. Mm-hmm. And it's Paul just saying, hey, why in the world are we talking about love? And why in the world are we talking about hypocrisy? And mm-hmm. why in the world are we talking about all these issues in the church? What gives the authority to talk about that? And why even care about that? And the hinge then swings wide open. It's the resurrection. That changes yeah. everything. Yeah. So the follow-up question I kind of wrote down, you've sort of already touched on this a little bit, but you know, the series is called To My Friend Who Left the Faith. Mm-hmm. So when many people, not all, but many people who quote unquote leave the faith or stop practicing do so because of age of earth theory or right. science that doesn't seem to match up with the Bible, or because of how they've personally been treated, or the church in history and what happened. So why start with 1 Corinthians 15? You already kind of hinted, but
yeah.
explain that a little more.
Yeah, everything rises and falls with it. I mean, that's what Paul says there in, I don't remember which verse it is off the top of my head, but you know, this is of first importance. It is the thing that matters more than any other thing. It is the question that you have. It's not, you know, why are Christians jerks sometimes? It's not how old is the earth? It's not what about dinosaurs? It's not what about fill in the blank? It's why was that tomb empty? And if the answer is, which I think it is the most reasonable explanation out there, is mm-hmm. that God raised Jesus from the dead, then that means, well, then this guy demands everything. Mm-hmm. He is worthy of everything. It validates everything that he said about himself. It, mm-hmm. I mean, everything falls into place. And I may still have questions about why are Christians jerks. I think there's an answer for that. You know,
yeah.
I may have questions about how old is the earth at the end of the day. I don't know that it really matters.
No.
You know, all those mm-hmm. things. It's just like what matters is Jesus Christ rose from the dead. And so that's what my faith is built upon.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about the resurrection just as a fact before. And what a lot of people don't realize is that it actually takes more faith
yeah.
to believe that he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because there really is more historical evidence that the tomb is empty because Jesus was raised from the dead. And so in regards to which of the two options you're going to believe, it takes less faith to believe that. Like it takes less to actually believe that Jesus rose.
Yeah. Yeah. And we didn't spend time going into like all the different theories, mm-hmm. but you know, just sure. for those of you who are listening, you know, so there, I mean, the fact that the tomb was empty has never been disputed.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was empty from day one. Everybody was like, oh man, this, he ain't there. And yeah. so why?
You have to explain why.
Mm-hmm. Why? And so the first explanation, and you read it in scripture, is that they're like, well, the disciples stole the body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you start pulling at that thread logically, it's like, well, that makes zero sense.
Yeah, it doesn't.
You know, because here are, what is the disciples' response whenever Jesus dies?
They turn into a bunch of cowards.
Exactly. They're not looking yeah. for it. You know, Thomas doesn't even believe Jesus. He's like, he ain't alive. You know, I'm not going to believe it unless I stick my hand in his side and my, you know, the fingers in the holes of his hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Matthew 28, it's like he's getting ready to ascend and go back into heaven. And Matthew throws in there, and like some of them still doubted. And it's yeah. like, he's like on a cloud. He's ascending into heaven. And you're still not, I'm not sure I get that. I'm not sure yeah. I believe this is really happening.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was just you can just keep pulling on the thread. All those disciples, they died for this mm-hmm. belief that Jesus yeah. really.
The other thing that I maybe it was a year ago, we were talking resurrection in the teen room. And one of the things that I pointed out too was just like, Rome put military studs
mm-hmm.
in front of this as well. And yeah. it's like, you really expect a bunch of
fishermen
and tax collectors to come whoop up on probably some of the baddest dudes
yeah.
in the area. And then after they struggle to overcome them to move that probably 2-ton rock away from the opening of the cave where Jesus yeah. was. And not only that, but I was doing some research looking at this conversation. It was easier to move those stones into the place mm-hmm. mm-hmm. because they had dug a ridge.
Right.
And so they only pushed it downhill to cover.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. And so gravity. But to move that heavy of a stone out, they would have had to push it uphill.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been. Wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah.
Like they just wouldn't have been able to do that.
Especially when soldiers too would have, you know, experienced a very harsh punishment for falling asleep on their job and things like that.
Right.
And so perhaps even death.
Yeah.
Which is why the religious leaders pay them and mm-hmm. say, "Hey, we'll take care of this. Don't worry about it. We'll pay your superiors." So
yeah, I think the bottom line with it is like if Rome, if the Jewish leaders, if they could have produced a body to shut down this new, you know, flavor of faith, whatever you want to call it, as mm-hmm. they would have seen it, this heresy, mm-hmm. They would have produced it. They would have marched it down the streets. Mm-hmm. They would have hung it from the
outside. Jewish leaders, too.
Yes.
I mean, talking about heresy, Rome, it wasn't necessarily a heresy for them. It was just a
power thing, yeah.
Yeah, power. But it was a heresy for the Jewish leaders at the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got all that with the disciples. I heard one theory. This one made me laugh more than any other, is that Jesus didn't actually die. He just fell asleep. And then when he woke up inside the tomb, he moved the rock himself and then whooped up on those guards. And then he was, you know, fine.
Is that I'm like, the swoon theory, something like that?
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that
swoon.
One.
Yeah.
Yes, he swooned.
Yeah. So that kind of led me to a question. What is, for you, if you had to pick one that was the most convincing for you, most convincing reason for you to say the resurrection really happened? What's the one that rises to the top of your list?
I mean, for me, it's the tomb was empty. I think one of the most interesting things.
Well, I mean, sorry, my question was what the reason behind the empty tomb?
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the most convincing reason that points to the fact that the tomb was?
Well,
empty?
I think that it comes down to like the idea that he passed out and revived. Okay, that's just laughable. The idea that the body was stolen, laughable. The idea that the ladies went to the wrong tomb, you know, laughable. The idea that, you know, nobody ever produced the body after the fact and said, no, here he really is. It's like you just start looking through those things. It is the most reasonable explanation.
Yeah.
I mean, as weird as it sounds, the most reasonable explanation is that someone who was dead is no longer dead.
And I think what kind of puts the icing on the cake? For me as well, is just the scriptural accounts of eyewitnesses who mm-hmm. saw him post-resurrection mm-hmm. as well. And when you start to look at just this is what the Bible says about all these people who saw him, some stories about the encounters with him, if you believe the Bible is inerrant, and you should, because there's more historical evidence that the Bible is accurate than there is Julius Caesar. Like if you're a Roman Empire guy, you know, there's more proof of the reliability of the Bible's documents than there are Roman history's documents. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you got all this talk in the Bible about these eyewitnesses, the stories. It's like, oh yeah, it mm-hmm. does, like that comes up and it's like, there's not even a doubt in my mind
mm-hmm.
that this is what really happened.
I think for me, I'm actually going to go with just the tradition of the Jewish people. Because for thousands of years, their Sabbath and day of worship had been Saturday. And then all of a sudden, after like thousands of years of tradition, like we don't change well
as
a human culture, mm-hmm. let alone, you know, thousands of years of Jewish history. And then all of a sudden, like a day of worship has changed. So for me, because that's even, you know, outside of written documents and stuff, that's people's day of worship. Like that's a big deal.
Yeah. People's Day of Worship, and then you've also got one of the other ones that's thrown out there in the kind of scholastic talk about the resurrection is the existence of the church is also tangible proof that the resurrection was real and true, because if it wasn't, the church wouldn't have lasted this long.
Well, and too, one of the things I was reading this past week was I think they said there's around 5 or 6 different messianic figures that show up in a 100-year period of time around Jesus.
Yep.
And all of them died.
Mm-hmm.
All of their followers dissipated, broke up, joined another group.
Uh-huh.
It did not continue. And so I think that goes, you know, hand in glove with what you're talking about, Luke. It's like for the church and for followers of Jesus to continue after his death makes no sense.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Unless he rose from the dead.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's funny too, James like becomes a leader, half brother of Jesus, becomes a leader in the church and stops calling him brother and starts calling him Lord.
Yeah, that may
Jesus
be the most
Christ.
Convincing yeah. that may like, be the most convincing.
You know what? If I grew up with my, you know, if my sister said she was God, like I'm saying, no way. Like and she'd say it's the same thing to me. So
For sure.
Hey, here's a fun question. I just thought it'd be fun to ask you guys. Luke, you were talking about all the post-resurrection experiences, like 500 at one time, or to Thomas, or the disciples behind a closed door, and all this stuff, two on the road to Emmaus. Which one, once again, if you have to pick one, which one do you think it would be most fun for you to be a fly on the wall as Jesus post-resurrection appears to, you know, a disciple or a group of people? Which one is it for you?
For me, it's I think the road to Emmaus. To be in on that conversation, and there's a few reasons. One is because the two disciples of Jesus who are on that road, we don't know. So like we know the characters of the rest. We don't know who these two are.
Yeah.
And I think it'd be fun to kind of see and hear their name, and kind of get a different perspective of, well, they weren't the closest of the 12, but they were still in, like they were in and they were watching the whole thing. And so I think it'd be interesting to kind of see that, but also like part of what happens on the road to Emmaus is Jesus, before he reveals who he really is, he like explains to them on the way to the house, all of the events and why they happened that way, you know? And it's like, yeah, I want to hear Jesus explain it. Like that would be amazing, you know, to listen in on that conversation, and then just to see, I think, see the response of their faces whenever they realize that the guy that they've been spending hours with back home is actually Jesus resurrected.
Yeah, and then what happens right after that?
That happens right after that. He's like
gone.
He's gone.
It's like what just happened, you know? And so I think that one would be the most fun for a lot of reasons. To be kind of a fly on the wall, to see kind of the interaction and the expression on faces.
Yeah. Adam, what do you think?
I would probably choose the first one that he appears to the disciples. Mm-hmm. They're hiding up in the room and he just appears, kind of that one. Just because I think it would, because in that one, I'm kind of assuming I'm one of the 12 or 11 at that point. just... the shock and the awe of it all, and that would be great. Even though I guess technically Emmaus is first, but they didn't know they were first,
right?
And so knowing that, you know, you're kind of in on the inside. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I could agree with both those. I thought the road to Emmaus would be fun. Part of it for me too. I like the interaction with Thomas, you know, because Jesus like.
I like it because it wasn't me.
Well, but we are, though. Like, all of us are Thomas, you know, in some sense where, you know, I'm sure all of us have at one point said, God, I want to see this. Mm-hmm. I want to experience this. And, you know, in that moment, you don't have like a super judgy Jesus coming and going, Thomas, come on. Like, he gives him grace and gives him proof. And it's just
he provides
cool
what
thing.
He needs.
He provides what he needs, yeah. Yeah. You know, resurrection was so important because in the first century, no one expected it to happen. Adam, you hinted at that earlier. The Jewish people had a belief that it was corporate at the end of time. But Greek and Roman culture didn't really have any sort of equivalent to this. There was afterlife talk, but no one expected for a real person to do this. And I think naturally for us, and we don't expect someone to raise from the dead nowadays, but if we look back and we have all this evidence and say, yeah, Jesus, the most likely explanation is that the tomb was empty. So the most likely explanation is that Jesus did in fact rise from the dead. So I'm just thinking about modern day people, like our family members. What do you think they are thinking today? Like, do they believe the resurrection happened? Why or why not? And then if they do believe it happened, but their lives aren't any different, why do you think that is happening?
I would venture to guess. Well, first off, you know, from surveys and just a polling that I forget what it is. I think it's down to like, I think it's like 2/3 of the people believe it happened now or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Okay. I think my guess would be one of two things, that people think it's just a really nice story mm-hmm. that was told.
Okay.
That got made up later. And, you know, the disciples really, really wanted Jesus to still be alive. So they just started telling people that. The other would be that they would be like, yeah, he may have raised from the dead. I just don't know why that really matters or should change anything.
Do you think that there's just not any sort of pressing concern? Like it's, I don't know. Like I was listening to something recently talking about how our world changes so fast. And they're like, yeah, if I watch something on YouTube and it's 6 months old, I'm like, ah, oh, forget that. I need something today. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So it was like 2000 years ago. So mm-hmm. I guess, does that make sense? What I'm asking, like, yeah, the resurrection might've happened, but it was a long time ago. I don't know. Like, yeah. What about today?
I don't know. My thoughts are going to just the effect of sin and brokenness in this world has caused so many people to turn inward. Mm-hmm. Which is what happened in the garden. If you think about it, you know, the serpent comes along, convinces Adam and Eve that God is holding something back from them. They end mm-hmm. up eating from the tree that they weren't supposed to eat from. And the text literally in Genesis chapter 3 says, and once they ate it, they saw that they were naked mm-hmm. and then they went and covered themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And so there's something about sin and brokenness that whenever we're a part of that, it actually causes us to lose focus on what we're supposed to be focused on. Yeah. And all of a sudden we turn really inward. And I think when we get to this point in our culture to where a lot of people are, you know, dealing with the ramifications of sin and brokenness, whether the stuff that they've done or the stuff that's been done to them, mm-hmm. like that causes us to turn inward and to focus on ourselves. And so whenever we're focused on ourselves, we're not really concerned with whether or not the resurrection is true. What we're concerned with is, am I going to be entertained today? Mm-hmm. Or am I going to have enough money from this job to provide for me and for my family? Or is the people in control of our city and of our state and of our government, are they people that I can trust and rely? Because all of it is, we're focused inwardly. And when we're focused inwardly, big deal about the resurrection, because that yeah. we can't even begin to comprehend what that means for us, because that's out of our radar of thought.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I'm going with just, it's, we're so conditioned to, in the culture we've been in for a while now, of what's right in front of our face, what's 5 minutes from now, what's, you know, right here, that sometimes even something as big as the resurrection, it seems so far away or so untouchable for our lives, which is why I loved your outline that it's your past that can be forgiven. It doesn't, it's not just the greatest event in history. It's your past.
Yeah.
It's your present and it's your future. So let's explore those a little bit. Just getting into the outline here, the application. What is just encouraging or an observation or a challenge from that first point? Let's talk about that. The first point of the outline was your past can be forgiven because of the truth of the resurrection. How does that encourage us? How does that encourage us to have conversations with our one? How does that strike you guys?
Yeah, I think, you know, you go through the story of Jesus and you read through the Gospels and you hear him say things to people like, you know, your sins are forgiven. I think for those of us who've been in church for a while, we've read those things so many times, we forget what gives him the authority and the power to be able to actually say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I can walk around and just say that to somebody.
Right. You know? Yeah. Well, and really that's part of the reason for the significant conflict with the yes. religious leaders.
Yeah.
Is that uh-huh. they understand that whenever he says uh-huh. that, yeah. who he's claiming to be.
Yeah.
And so
only God can do that.
Right. Yeah. And so their apprehension to accepting Jesus is because the resurrection has not happened yet.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's like you go back and it's like, oh, okay, here's why he was able to do this. This is what gives him the right to do this. You know, the resurrection is what validates him as the Son of God, the one who is able to forgive sins. And so I think that that's that just powerful reminder that the reason he's able to do these things is why I can put my hope and my trust and my faith that all these things that I've done, all these things that I haven't done, all the times, to use a vocabulary from last week, that I've tried to make myself Savior and Lord in my own life.
Right.
All the times I have searched, to use a Paul David Tripp vocabulary, for meaning horizontally instead of vertically.
Yeah. Sure.
All those things can be, they are forgiven, and that God does not hold those things against me. And that's, holy moly, I mean, that's a, I mean, that relieves a little bit of weight there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, what's challenging too, you think about, God has a standard and we don't meet it.
Right.
But what's even more challenging is we have a standard for ourselves and we don't even meet the standard for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke, how does that first one strike you? Your past can be forgiven. What's important to you? Or
I don't know. I'm thinking about just usually in this context of language, whenever we're talking about our past, usually what we mean is like the sin that we've committed or, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I, what's going to my mind right now, whether good or bad, is just the communal aspect of sin. Mm-hmm. Like every time that I had done something wrong in my past, it wasn't just myself that I was hurting.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Like sin is communal. And so, and you guys listening, if you don't believe that, like, I'll just kind of gently push back and just say you're wrong. You know, the drunkenness of a father isn't just the sin of the father. Like, that is affects those who he's around.
I remember growing up, my parents sometimes told me, you know, this hurts me more than it hurts you.
Right.
And of course, that could be for them dishing out a consequence.
Right.
But it also is just, as a parent now, I look at my children, and when they sin, I mean, they're sinners just like I am.
Right.
And I can say that honestly, like, man, it hurts. It hurts me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, whenever I started to learn that lesson of just the mistakes that I've made, the times that I've tried to make myself Savior and Lord instead of Jesus, the sinful habits that I've gotten myself into, whenever I understood that it wasn't just hurting me, but it was hurting other people, that is whenever I felt incredible guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And so to have the truth of the resurrection and then to bridge that gap to what that means for me, like it overwhelms me with gratitude that the hurt that I've caused other people can actually be forgiven and wiped clean. And I don't know, it's just one of those things to where it's just incredibly encouraging to me that the harm that I've done to others and to myself can be forgiven because the resurrection is true.
And not just your sin being forgiven to you, but the harm that you have inflicted, or I, or all of us have inflicted on others, can be healed by God.
Right.
Because of the resurrection too. Like, he's more powerful than what we do. So our past can be forgiven. That's huge. You can experience power today. Adam, give a little bit of just context, clarity, reminder from the sermon, or just other thoughts about what power are we talking about? Because it's, you know, it's not power to bench press. I know that. I can't lift very much.
Speak for yourself.
Well, you can bench more than I can.
Philippians 4:13.
Easily, you know.
I can lift 450 pounds through Christ who strengthens me.
That's
exactly right.
There's a friend that has a coffee mug that says, I can take Bible verses out of context through Christ who strengthens me, or something
like
that.
That's good.
That's a good one, yeah.
No, I think, I believe in... listeners, or one of the two sitting across the table from me, can fact check me on this, but I think it's Romans 8:11 that talks about how the same power that raised Christ, you guys are nodding your head. Okay. I think I'm right. Mm-hmm. The same power that raised Christ is now alive in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for me, whenever I read a verse like that, it's like this stop me in my tracks moment. To where if I am thinking, it's like, I don't have what ability, what power do I have to, you know, influence a friend, to influence my family, to influence people here at the church, or what power do I have to overcome this, you know, this sin that's holding me back? It's like, I'm just powerless and all this stuff. It's like, well, that's nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just bad theology. Mm-hmm. It is, no, I have the very same spirit that raised Jesus Christ from the dead through the grace of God is now alive and active in me. And so it's an incredible encouragement and reminder that's like, oh, okay. To use the Philippians, I can do,
right?
You know, everything through Christ who strengthens me, because that power is available, and it's learning to walk in step with the Spirit, to keep in step with the Spirit, so that I'm actually allowing the Spirit to move through me. I don't know if I like the phrase "tap into the Spirit's power" or not, but you know, that I'm allowing that power to flow, you know, in right. me, through me, connected with Him. And so I think, you know, I look at a lot of the stories that we've been hearing through our baptism testimony videos, and you know, there have been several. It's just been like, wow, listen to that, you know,
yeah.
And that is the power of Jesus that changes somebody's life. And I know far too many people now who are used to bees, you know, or they used tos, and it's not because of willpower or any of those other things that they were able to overcome it. It's because of the power of the Spirit.
Yeah. Luke, what do you think power for today? How does that challenge you, encourage you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think encourage and challenge are the two words that are correct. Because if you like, just stop for a minute. Like, if the fact that the same power that brought Jesus back to life is alive in you, if that doesn't like stop you and bring you to a moment of worship, yeah. I don't know what does.
Yeah.
Because like that is incredible to me. And so what I find myself guilty of, and what I see in a lot of other people, is whenever we forget that, we just become not confident in ourselves, mm-hmm. which maybe isn't a bad thing, because we shouldn't necessarily be confident in ourselves in regards to this conversation. What we should be confident in is the power of the Spirit working through us. Mm-hmm. But whenever I read this and I'm thinking, you know, the same power that rose Jesus from the dead is alive in me. So what makes me think that I am therefore not equipped to handle a conversation with my one?
Sure.
And what makes me think that I am not equipped to live a life that honors God? First Peter 1, 2 Peter 1, 2
Peter 1, 1 3.
You know, His divine mm-hmm. power has given me everything that I need to live a life of godliness. And so it's just that encouragement to say, no, I can do this. And the challenge to say, no, I should do this, because mm-hmm. that power is running through me. Mm-hmm. And all of those who have put their faith in Christ and received the gift of the Spirit. And that's just incredible to me.
Yeah. Well,
it's just, wow.
What is it that Paul tells Timothy? He's like, he didn't give you a spirit of timidity. It's a spirit of power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it teaches us to be able to say no to ungodliness and yes to godliness. And yes, it's just like, it's right there. And so too many of us walk around, just weak.
Yeah.
Because we think it all depends on us, and we know us pretty well. And so, yeah, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever I
Absolutely.
Do that,
yeah.
You know, whenever we do that, it's sad.
So, I was reading this morning, started my Bible reading plan through the year. I'm in Genesis, you know, and it's the story where Abraham sends his servant to his home country to get a wife for his son, Isaac, you know, and, yeah. And so what was really
I wish it was still done like that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I don't think you do.
No, I don't. I don't. I remember whenever I was still single, I used to make jokes all the time. I was like, Mom, Dad, I trust you. Like, who you got?
Yeah, you know? There you go. No, he goes to find a wife for Isaac. And I was just struck by the combination of like divine intervention. Mm-hmm. But also his wisdom. And I think the same thing is true in our life. You're talking about, how do we experience power today? Obviously, divine intervention, like the Holy Spirit has to work through us. But I want to just throw this out there as an encouragement to everybody. You can, I guess, put yourself in places that more easily the Spirit can flow through you and give you power. Mm-hmm. And so here, just really practically, this comes from last night in Tim Boland teaching the 3 degrees of impact class. It was just great, some good life skill type stuff. And he said, like one of the things you can actually do to help you exhibit change is to celebrate in the moment. So, you know, you can actually give yourself a high five in the mirror. And scientifically, that's proven to help yourself get motivated for the right thing. So if you want to do something practical, like read the Bible every day, you like coffee also. So do, you know, put your Bible right by the coffee maker the night before. And that way it's right there. When you make the coffee, you see the Bible, and then go find a mirror and give yourself a high five, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yes, it's the Spirit's power, all of that. But whatever you want to change, you know, leading your family in prayer, praying with your spouse, getting your finances in order, conversations with your kids, all those real life practical things that we want to experience the power of the Spirit in. Like, yes, it's God working through you, but place yourself in position where you can succeed even more. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I
hear you.
The real life stuff from Tim. It was great.
So. Yeah. Like there's the, and I can't remember, it's after the Exodus. And so they're getting ready to cross. Would it be the Red Sea? But anyway, it's, you know, Moses and the people are just kind of like, well, we don't know what to do. And so Moses is like, tell everybody just to be still. And God is like, what are you waiting on? And so there's like this, there's this combination of it's the Spirit flowing through me, but it's also me taking the initiative to be in a place to where the Spirit is able to flow through me. And that's why, like, I think I've used this example before. It's like, you know, sometimes in our daily Bible readings, we are logging pages for Jesus. And it may feel dry. It may feel like nothing's happening. And so we can be far too easily tempted to give up on it because it's like, oh, man, I haven't got anything out of this in like a whole week. Mm-hmm. But what I find is that it's through the discipline of putting myself there that's what gets me in the position to receive.
Yeah.
And so if I'm not there, I'm not going to receive, guaranteed.
Uh-huh.
And so it's that hand in hand.
Another illustration you have used is the whole extension cord, you know, where it's plugged into itself, your own power.
Yeah.
And so I'm just thinking right now, like maybe the light bulb doesn't go off every single day.
Correct.
But if it's not plugged into the power source, it ain't never going to go off.
Exactly.
If it's plugged into the power strip, though, it will turn on and go off sometimes. So anyway, so your past is forgiven. You can experience power today, and your future can be secure. Let's just wrap up here with just this challenge. You know, what's encouraging about that? What's jumping out to you?
Well, I think, and I said it on Sunday, but I mean, reality is the death rate in the United States and other countries too.
It's hovering. Yeah,
it's hovering. It's hovering right around 100%. You know, it's like. We nobody likes to think about it. Nobody likes to talk about it. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, unless Jesus comes back, we're all going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is an end to our life. And so knowing that my destination after this life is secure. Brings relief to me. It brings relief to my family. It brings relief to those who love me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just relief. It's a hopeful thing of I will be with the one who has saved me. I will be with the one who I have strained to see here in this life, and I will see face to face in the next. You know, and so it's just like that keeps you going.
Mm-hmm. It's a far different thing being a part of a Christian funeral and a non-Christian funeral. And the scripture says, you know, we mourn as those with hope.
Yeah.
So it's totally different. Yeah, Luke, what different. Are you thinking?
I was thinking of Ephesians chapter 1, just the encouragement in regards to our conversation with the last point kind of went the route of the power of the Spirit, all that sort of stuff. So I was thinking Ephesians chapter 1, verses 3 through 14. Is probably one of my favorite sections of scripture.
In Greek, it's one sentence.
Yeah, it's just like...
Try to read that without
like
reading.
If you've ever listened to a sermon where the preacher just like gets going and he's not stopping, that's that's what's happening whenever the pen hits the paper here. And Paul is just talking about all of the blessings that we receive because of what Christ has done. And it ends with talking about the Spirit. It says the Spirit is God's guarantee. mm-hmm. that he will give us the inheritance he promised.
It's almost like
he has
down...
purchased us to be his own people. And so it's like mm-hmm. that without the resurrection, without that power of the Spirit able to raise Jesus from the dead, that is not something that I can be certain of.
Yeah.
But because of the Spirit, because of that power, I can be certain. Like I have a stamp, I have a seal. Mm-hmm. Use the language there in Ephesians 1.
Yep.
I have a guarantee.
It's a down payment.
Yeah, secure.
It's a deposit.
Right.
I accidentally interrupted you a while ago to say, yeah, it's a down payment. Like you're purchasing a home. It's the
right.
Spirit is the down payment of your inheritance.
Yeah.
Earnest money.
There you go. Loved the message. And we hope it's been a challenge and an encouragement, as we always hope messages are. We also hope there is something practical you can go do with it. We think that putting legs to the message is what we have to do every week. And so, Adam, I loved the bottom line, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, nothing matters less. And if Jesus did rise from the dead, nothing matters more. So
yeah.
Talk to us about that. I love the turn of phrase there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's why it's the bottom line. You know, because that's the sermon in a sentence. Is it is the thing that matters more than any other thing. And if it didn't really happen, we should all, I mean...
It's just bogus, a joke.
It's bogus. Yeah. It's whatever. Go be Stoics and just try to be good people, I guess, or eat, drink, be merry.
Drink, be merry. Yeah.
You know, get your fill. Go take advantage of as many people as you want, because who cares? You know, survival of the fittest, baby. But if he truly did, yeah. if he truly did, then it changes everything.
Yeah. Challenge thoughts. So just how to live this out practically. Can you remind our listeners maybe some of the things we talked about in the sermon?
Yeah, well, I think the challenge really just came down to ponder. And so because the struggle with this message and coming up with a challenge for everybody is it really is aimed at two different groups of people. And one towards those who are already certain and sure, you know, that Jesus really did rise from the dead and they've given their lives to him. And then those who might be a little apprehensive and they're not for certain. And so it is just to take time and to think, to ruminate, to meditate, to ponder, to think about what it means, you know, that Jesus did rise from the dead. I would also throw this out there, too, as a secondary challenge for those of you who are, you know, trying to have conversations with your one. And you're like, man, I feel like I need some more ammunition in the chamber, you know, to be able to talk about this. Mm-hmm. There's so many, you know, great books about this. Probably one of the simplest ones. And guys, you throw in your two cents on this. It's older because like it's probably close to 25 years old now. But Lee Strobel's Case for Christ.
Oh yeah, that's good. It's a good one.
Pretty standard.
Yeah.
You know, on that, it's a. I mean this in the most positive way. It's an easy read
mm-hmm.
and like it's an enjoyable, that's the word I'm looking for. It's an enjoyable read that works through some headier topics mm-hmm. there. If you want, you know, deeper treatments and those things, you can always go to, you know, like stuff like More Evidence That Demands a Verdict and all those other kind of things. But
Reason for God by Keller.
Reason for God is fantastic. But, you know, and so it's just, spending time just studying just so that you feel more, mm-hmm. more equipped with that. And then too, if it happens to be you're listening and you're one of the folks that is apprehensive and you're kind of doubting it, I would still highly recommend every single one of those books.
Yeah.
And say, search it out.
Yeah.
I mean, this is.
Try to prove yourself right.
Yeah.
Like if you, this is what I do whenever I get some sort of theory and I'm like, okay, I'm starting to feel this way. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to research it and try to prove myself right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. you know, for those that don't believe the resurrection as a fact, get some books out and try to prove yourself mm-hmm. right or wrong. You might like or not like what you find.
Yeah, I like that. If you are already a Christian and you are, you know, convinced, as we are, that Jesus rose from the dead and it has changed everything, maybe just take 15 minutes and take a 15-minute pause. And like you said, Adam, ponder. And maybe for some material, look at Ephesians 1, 3 through 14, like Luke mm-hmm. mentioned, or look at 1 Corinthians 15.
What Romans 8.
Reread it. Romans 8 is a great chapter of the Bible as well. So, man, lots of good stuff. And week two of this series, we got two left, so we're excited to see where else.
What's coming up next week? Just so for those listening that might have a one that, you know, one topic might hit other, like what's coming up this week. Invite your one regardless, but just so that you've got some information of what's coming up this Sunday.
Yeah, let me get my notes up again just to remind myself, because believe it or not, I don't have this memorized.
I can't believe
it. Inside baseball right here.
Yeah. So let me see. So first week we were dealing with the elder brother. The second week we dealt with, you know, doubt, certainty, faith, resurrection. Next week, if my memory serves correct, yeah, we're going to be dealing with the idea of why are so many Christians hypocrites?
Okay.
And just kind of dealing with that. And then for the conclusion of it, we'll deal with that huge question of, you know, pain, evil, suffering.
Sure.
You know, one of those things that everybody's got questions about.
Yeah. Three of the most central questions probably of doubt and faith and how they interact. So good stuff. Invite. Let's continue to see God work through us, in us, in spite of us here at Corinth 2023. Guys, you know the Bible pretty well, I think you'd say.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
We're going to play a game, trivia. Who am I in the Bible today? And
this might get embarrassing.
They're not that hard.
You might have to hit the pause button.
But shout it out when you know it, all right? Here it is. All right. I was a Pharisee, a man of learning.
It was Saul.
I was lost spiritually. There you go. Saul.
So we're not going to. Oh, okay.
Shout it out when you know it.
Yeah, he said, shout it out.
Okay. Shout it out when you know it. Okay. I was a runaway slave who was spiritually lost, but the Apostle Paul.
Onesimus.
There you go. 1-1. Onesimus. All right.
Or however you said.
Onesimus.
Yeah. Onesimus.
Onesimus.
I was a foreigner who held an important office in my sovereign's cabinet. A Christian approached me as I was reading. He gave me a new.
Oh, the Ethiopian eunuch.
There you go. All right. Adam 2, Luke 1.
Look, there's water. Let's do it now.
Let's do it now.
There you go. All right. We got 25 of these. We won't do all of them. We're not going to do all of them. All right. I was a very rich man.
The rich young ruler?
No. But I did not gain all my money honestly. My fellow citizens.
Zacchaeus.
Yeah, there you go.
Zacchaeus. He was a wee little man.
You got to insert your opinions quicker. He's beating you 3-1 now.
That's okay.
That's okay.
I'm just the youth minister.
I am the sister of an Old Testament hero. Although I was a woman of God, I sinned.
Miriam.
There you go, yeah, Miriam.
I couldn't remember
sister
her name.
Of Moses there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Though I was a pagan king, I loved Daniel, who served the one true God.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Is it?
Sadly, I nevertheless
signed
a decree
Belshazzar?
That almost
no, that's Daniel's name.
Daniel's death. After I saw my mistake, I turned to the God of Daniel, who is the king.
It's not Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar's in Daniel, but it's not him. It's Belteshazzar, what you said, is Daniel's Babylonian name.
Okay.
Hezekiah was an Israelite king.
This is great. Starts with a D.
Darius.
Darius.
Oh, okay. It was Darius. Darius. Okay. Or Darius.
Or Darius.
Depending on how pretentious you are.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to call that a tie, 3-3. So we'll do the tiebreaker right here and then end the episode. And
best of seven. Best of seven.
Best of seven. Go. Here it is. All right. Who am I?
Josh.
There you go.
Winner. I was a Roman governor in the time of Paul the Apostle.
Oh, gosh.
Like all men.
Festus, Felix.
Herod.
Felix. He's just listing the latter part of Acts there. Yeah, yeah. Felix. Okay. Paul took the opportunity to witness about the Lord Jesus to me and my wife. That day I heard the gospel. There you go.
And Bible. Did not respond.
Who am I? We had a lot of fun. Hopefully you did too. As always, we want to say thank you. We're grateful for you, and hopefully this has been helpful, challenging, encouraging, all of that. Hope to see you next week for part 3 of To My Friend Who Left the Faith, and then we'll be back right here in your car the week after that as well. So we love you, we like you, and we'll see you next week.